Movie buff specialist Phil and John are back with another in our Marvel film review series, and we are talking about Black Panther tonight, the long-awaited Black Panther live tonight. And we're talking about Napoleon, Ridley Scott's 2 hour and 37 minute movie that is going to be soon 4 hours, which will automatically put it in John's top 10 movies of all time, because he only puts movies over 4 hours in his top 10 movies of all time so that he can let you know he's better than you.
But, my number one movie of all time is like 90 minutes long.
That is true. Your
number one's Casablanca.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Well, your OG number one was Stalker.
It's only two and a half hours. That's not that long.
That was pretty damn long. But, yeah, we got Jason Obermeyer here who says the review we've all been waiting for, Phil. And I'm gonna preface with this. Black Panther has benefited from the fact that I've watched all of the other Marvel movies that come before it. Because what I learned very quickly was I really don't like it. Don't like it at all. Like, I really don't. But I was having a hard time explaining why it deserved to be rated with a 1.5 star or a 1 star. And the reason why I was having a hard time with that was because, like, when I sit down and I look at the other Marvel movies we've discussed thus far, Age of Ultron is a 1 star movie. Yep. And I can explain why that is a 1 star movie. The Hulk is a 1 star movie. Sorry, the Incredible Hulk. The Ang Lee Hulk might be a 1/2 star movie. The Avengers is a 1.5 star movie. Thor: The Dark World is a 1.5 star movie. I can explain pretty easily why all of those are 1.5 star movies. What it comes down to with Black Panther is Black Panther is bad. I'm going to say it is a bad movie. However, it's not as offensively bad as the other Marvel movies. And actually, what Black Panther falls victim to, which I would almost say in some instances is worse than being bad, is it's boring. And I can't wait to talk about it. But that's going to be, we're going to be talking about that one. We talk about that one last, right?
We do. We have to talk about
Jason Obermeyer here for the next 35 minutes listening to us blab about Napoleon. John, I'm just going to tell you, I have a surprise for you, but once you look at it, it's all you're ever going to want. So I just want you to remember that. And it is this nice. I have nothing to show. Now it's kind of weird, right? But that scene was so bad, and it was in like every trailer. So I knew it was coming for Napoleon. And then I watched it and I was like, man, that did not hit on the level that Ridley Scott wanted to hit on. But John, you hated this movie. So
I did. I didn't quite like hate it.
You gave it 1.5 stars, John.
I gave it 1.5 stars. It's pretty low. I will admit this movie did nothing for me. And I'm really disappointed in that, because this was a movie that I was pretty excited for. And I think, I can't remember which director it was that we were talking about it, but we were talking about it earlier in this series, where there's a director that I've always like hyped up for and then disappointed by. And I think Ridley Scott's one of them. Like, I think Ridley Scott just, like, his highs are so good. We talked about two of his movies in both of our top 100s.
Did we both have Gladiator and Alien?
We both had Gladiator and we both had Alien.
Okay, so we both had the same ones. Okay.
Yeah. But his lows are terrible.
Yeah.
His lows are so bad. And I think the biggest thing, you already alluded to it, Phil. Ridley Scott has been very vocal. There's like a 4.5 hour cut of this movie that like really focuses on Josephine, Vanessa Kirby's character. Why don't we get that in the theatrical cut of this movie? Like, I don't need it to be 4.5 hours. Would I have actually gone to a theater for a 4.5 hour movie? Yeah, it's me. Of course I would. Would anyone else? Probably, like, the few handful of you who listen to this, and maybe not even that. But I'm so sick and tired of Ridley Scott releasing a movie theatrically and then being like, nah, guys, here's my director's cut. It's the actual movie I wanted to make. Because all of his movies have so many cuts, with the exception of his two really good movies.
Well, I would argue three, because I would also throw Black Hawk Down in there, and that only has one cut as well. And I think that's that might be one of the best war movies ever made. It's just super.
I will admit, I've never seen that movie.
Okay. Yeah, that's a really great movie. And that's one that doesn't have many cuts. Thelma and Louise doesn't have many cuts. The Martian doesn't have many cuts. But then you get into this like Blade Runner. There's 900 cuts of that movie. You know, now he's talking about doing it with this. Did Prometheus have multiple? I mean, obviously All the Money in the World did, but that was because All the Money in the World was doomed from the moment they cast Kevin Spacey and they were screwed.
Yeah, I don't remember about Prometheus. I think it might have, but Prometheus was almost like, I enjoyed Prometheus more than I enjoyed this movie.
Hmm.
Kingdom of Heaven, another movie that like notoriously has a director's cut that's acclaimed better than the theatrical cut. But the thing is, like, it's happened so many times with Ridley Scott now where it's not a question of studio interference anymore. It's a question of what is this director doing?
Yeah. I like Ridley Scott. I do. And when I'm looking at his movies here, I don't like Blade Runner. I am very vocal about Blade Runner. And that is one that, like, that is a one-star movie to me. And I've seen that enough to know that. Like, Black Panther, definitely because of the time I watched it, it's just boring, but we'll talk about it. Mm-hmm. But like Blade Runner, I've seen every cut of that movie. And every time I go, okay, I'm glad I did that. So now I can tell the fanatics of that movie that it still sucks. I hate Blade Runner. I don't like it. But like Alien, I love. The Martian, I enjoyed. I didn't love it, but I thought it was a well-made movie. I love Gladiator. Thelma and Louise is a classic. Honestly, didn't really mind The Last Duel. Thought it was a pretty good movie, even though it is what it is. Liked Prometheus enough. I even didn't hate Hannibal, an American Gangster, you know, all that. And then Black Hawk Down is phenomenal. And if you haven't seen Black Hawk Down, check out Black Hawk Down, because Black Hawk Down is a great movie. I have done a very good job of avoiding the Ridley Scott movies that I won't like, such as House of Gucci. Didn't watch that.
That movie was not good.
Didn't watch Alien Covenant. I've actually never seen Robin Hood or Kingdom of Heaven. I never watched Matchstick Men. I didn't watch Body of Lies. I didn't watch Exodus, Gods and Kings. I didn't watch All the Money in the World. I didn't watch A Good Year. What I'm getting at is I do feel like he has very high highs and very low lows.
Yeah.
But I have done a very good job, I believe, of avoiding his low lows.
Sure.
And Napoleon for me was just the most fine movie I've ever seen. And I'm not using fine as a positive. I am saying this as there was nothing that I found offensively bad, and there was nothing I found incredibly good. It was just a fine movie, and it felt like a director who knows how to make a movie and knows how to do like make these big action scenes and do character, who essentially said, let's like ramp it up to a five. You know, like sometimes it goes to an 11, right. Let's ramp it up to a five. Ridley Scott's not going to make, I mean, you gave it 1.5 stars, so you don't like it, but in my opinion, Ridley Scott's not going to make an absolutely terrible movie, because he's made enough movies that he's at least going to make it either look good, or there's going to be a story behind it that keeps you enthralled. One of those two things is going to happen. However, Napoleon felt like he didn't want to really drag you in with either of those. He wanted to just keep you level the entire time. I felt really almost nothing. I almost gave this 2 stars, and at the last second I said, you know what? The last battle, Waterloo, was pretty cool. I liked it. So I'll give it the extra half star, just because I really appreciate the fact when directors still go out there and use and use practical effects and aren't just using CGI. And I thought that was cool. Even if Battle of the Bastards did it better. I mean, you know, it is what it is.
I was just so checked out of this movie by the time we got to the Battle of Waterloo.
Mm-hmm.
And like, maybe it's also me just like having my brief, like, high school education in the Napoleonic era, knowing that I'm just waiting for the Battle of Waterloo at this point, because it means the movie's almost over.
Yeah.
And like that's what it came down to. Like, you're talking about Black Panther being boring. This movie, it was so boring. There was just there was nothing infused into it to make it interesting. The best review I have seen for this movie on Letterboxd is this is like reading a Wikipedia page, but more boring.
That's, I'll be honest with you, that's kind of what I felt it was. I felt like Ridley Scott sat down and said, I want to make a movie about Napoleon. And they said, okay, what part? And he said, all of it. And one of the top reviews on Letterboxd right now is I can't wait for Sofia Coppola's Josephine. Because that really does feel like Ridley Scott took the Baz Luhrmann approach of, I want to get it all in. And because of that, character and stuff suffered. And I agree with the fact that character suffered in this movie. I felt nothing for Napoleon. I felt nothing for Josephine. Napoleon's obsessions and things like that. There just needed to be a decision of what is the movie we want to make. Because I always, my prime example, I think it's the greatest example in film or TV. I really do. It blew my mind the first time I watched it, is Mad Men. And if you haven't seen Mad Men, it's not really a spoiler. It all happens in the pilot. But the entire pilot of Mad Men is Don Draper, you know, going and, you know, he's working and you see everything happening in on Madison Avenue, in the agency, everything that's going on. There is literally zero mention of a life outside of it. And then at the end of the episode, and maybe I'm misremembering, maybe it's a little bit earlier than that, but he goes to his house and you find out that he has a wife and kids. And you're like, what? And it's telling you everything you need to know about that character is that his wife and kids do not matter. They are secondary to everything else that this man needs. I didn't feel like I got any of that from Napoleon. I didn't understand his obsession with Josephine. I didn't understand the Napoleon complex is the most infamous of the chip on the shoulder complexes there are. And the fact that I didn't feel that I totally grasped why Napoleon was the way he was, I think was a problem because this is so well known. So that's how I feel about it. But yeah, anyway, continue.
I think the movie just never presents Napoleon as a character. I think that's the problem, right? Like, we never get inside Napoleon's head. We never understand any of his... I harp about it a lot. Guys, I really like motivation in characters. All I want is a motivation. And Napoleon didn't really have one in this movie. Yeah. There's, like, little hints at it about, like, you know, being from Corsica and, like, you know, wanting to make a name for himself and stuff. But it's so minute and so brushed to the side and all at the beginning of this long film that you forget about it and you never see it. You never see these moments where Napoleon's just having a human conversation with someone. Like, it's all tactical. It's all battle. And we don't know who Napoleon is as a character. And granted, like, if that's what Ridley Scott's going for, that's fine. But I just expected more. Like, when we look at something like Gladiator, we got character in that movie. And it's what makes that movie so fascinating.
Yeah.
But you have Joaquin Phoenix, who is arguably one of the best actors of his generation. Vanessa Kirby, who is coming out as a phenomenal actress. And we don't get anything from either of them because Vanessa Kirby's not in enough of the movie. And they don't interact with each other enough to flush out character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, and I'm going to get to a lot of these comments here, but I'm going to look at William Williams first. Movie should have focused on one or a handful of particular incidents in Napoleon's life. The whole thing feels disjointed. I totally agree. And I gave this 2.5 stars. And again, a lot of it was the visuals. I did think it looked very good. I was into the story for the most part until I wasn't. My review of Five Nights at Freddy's was it was cool until the thing started doing stuff. And I felt like Napoleon was fine until you realized it wasn't going anywhere. I am very into the Reign of Terror era. And if you go and you watch our top 100s that we did, one of the replacement movies, because I did the Silence of the Lambs, I think it was Silence of the Lambs week. But either way, I did a replacement movie where I put in Reign of Terror, The Black Book, which is a movie from 1940-something. Anthony Mann directed it. And it is about this, and it's a film noir set in the Reign of Terror and when they're trying to get the Black Book so that they can prove that Robespierre is doing whatever. And I really love that story. And I think it's so fascinating because we had one of the biggest revolutions in the history of mankind And it lasted for what? A couple weeks before everybody decided, you know what? The guy who's in power now needs to die too. And it was just pure chaos in France. And I don't think it got into enough of how chaotic it really was in France at this time. Because the Black Book ends with Napoleon showing up and you just see his hat and you know that that's him. But it doesn't get into that enough. And it wasn't, in my opinion, it wasn't for the sake of making a better movie. I am more than willing to forgive if they, you know, don't cast this or they don't put this part in or they ignore this or they ignore that. Because I understand they're making a movie. But I don't feel that Ridley Scott made the best movie with the information that was at his disposal. He decided to go a route that he decided to go. And it didn't feel like there was much of a purpose to it. Like anybody could complain about Gladiator and whatever you want to complain about with the Roman Empire and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
I don't care about any of that because I love Maximus and Commodus, right? That's his name. Is one of the most evil villains ever. So I could sit there and I could watch that over and over and over again. I don't care because I'm into it. This one, it felt like it was all pushed to the side just for the sake of being pushed to the side.
Yeah, I even like going on to that, like the first little bit of the movie, because the first thing we see in the entire movie is the beheading of Marie Antoinette. Mm-hmm. And it didn't feel like it meant anything to the movie. It just felt like Ridley Scott was like, this is an event that happened, so I have to keep it in the movie. And guys, look, Napoleon was there. But why don't we have anything like, why don't we have Napoleon talking to someone about it? Why don't we have something that like sets it up? We have no idea who this character is, aside from the fact that, you know, history tells us and we have a base education of it. But like, again, that's kind of the problem that I had with this movie is that it felt like Ridley Scott remembered his grade 9 education on Napoleon and just decided to make a movie of it. Rather than like, we've seen so many movies by so many fantastic directors who put time into these things to learn about these characters, to flush them out, and to know about their historical accuracies. Like, obviously, historical fiction is still fiction, but it's like Michael Carroll said, right? Like, Ridley Scott just ignored historians to make a story when there was already a story.
Yeah. Yeah, Napoleon is probably one of the most fascinating, in my opinion, and maybe this isn't how everybody feels, but I feel he's one of the most fascinating characters really in history because he ended up losing.
Yeah.
And that is something that people don't, you know, you talk about how he was great with war. And, you know, he had the, like I said, the ultimate chip on his shoulder. I don't know how else you want to really describe it, but it really was like he is fascinating because he lost. And even though he's remembered for his greatness and everything, he ended up dying as a nobody, really.
Yeah.
And I don't think anybody understood the gravity of what Napoleon was doing and how it was going to last 200 years into the future. I mean, we're 200 years removed from his death, and now they're making a movie about him. Yeah, I think there was a disservice there. And I think that I think what's going to happen, though, and this movie did not make very much money. And we're going to talk about box office badness this weekend because what a disaster for two $200 million movies. However, this might open the door for a great young up-and-coming director to take a shot at making a smaller version of this movie. Because at the end of the day, whether you like this movie or you hated this movie, Ridley Scott's only got a couple more movies left in him. If that, he's 85 years old. It blows my mind that he's 85 years old, but he's 85 years old. And I think that Ridley Scott, Stanley Kubrick, those are your best directors of practical action sequences, right?
Right.
Ridley Scott has always been a master at practical action sequences. Even in Blade Runner, there's great practical action sequences. But these giant battles where everything is actually happening in camera. And now, obviously, so much has advanced that you're able to see people do this on TV, in movies, whatever. But Ridley Scott, there's such a feel. There's something so particular. It's like when Mel Gibson did Braveheart. There is something so particular about those fight scenes compared even to parts of Lord of the Rings. I know a lot of Lord of the Rings happens in camera, but there's parts of Lord of the Rings where you can tell that's a CGI man that is about to attack another man. Like it is what it is. So I hope that this opens the door because we do need another great practical action director. We need one because everything can't be CGI, because we're going to talk about the end of Black Panther soon. And that's one of the worst fight scenes ever choreographed, ever filmed. It's absolutely horrendous considering the budget that's around it. You know, people always say, oh, you're pound for pound the strongest person, right? That is pound for pound the worst made battle sequence in film. It's so bad. So I hope that this opens the door, because there is such a great story to tell, but it wasn't told this time. And I don't think a 4.5 hour version of this is going to be the way to tell that story.
I think like the bigger thing is I'm not interested in watching this 4.5 hour version. I don't care what Ridley Scott has to say about it. Again, I love Vanessa Kirby in this movie. She was phenomenal.
Yeah.
With the little amount we get from her, you know she can give so much more. You know there's more there. But like, her character makes no sense with the way that she's portrayed in this movie. There is nothing that tells us, hey, by the way, she was sleeping around Napoleon while you were in Egypt, but you still are like crazy about her. So crazy that after he gets a divorce, he houses her and visits her frequently.
Yeah, we don't know why. Like, we see him, we see the one scene of her sleeping with whoever it was.
Yeah.
And it's so glossed over. It is very, very glossed over.
But the point is like, I don't care how much this 4.5 hour edit focuses on this character. I saw this final product and it doesn't make me want to revisit it. And like, that's the shame, because if there is a phenomenal 4.5 hour movie here, I don't know if I'm ever going to get around to it unless enough people around me are like, this is actually amazing. But it has to be people I trust with their film opinions too.
Well, and that's what I keep getting back to is everybody told me, as long as you watch the right version of Blade Runner, you're going to like it. And yep. I know, here's Jordan Alford, you are wrong. I get it. A lot of people like it. But it was funny because I actually talked to Will today. I was talking to Will about, you know, the podcast changes we're going with on the channel and stuff. And I was telling him, you know, I like doing the movie podcast, talking to John. He goes, what do you think about Blade Runner? And it was so random because Will is not a film guy. Will is that is not what he is. And I was like, I don't like it. He goes, yeah, I watched it last night. It was really, really boring. And I was like, it's interesting. He said, yeah, I was waiting for something to happen. I kept waiting for something to happen because everybody talks about it like it's so great. And then I was, you know, I said to him, I said, who do you think likes that movie? And we had this friend in college. I'm going to name drop him here. And he's going to listen to this podcast. And he's so excited. And he goes, Mink. And I go, Mink loves that movie. And it was so predictable as to the type of people who like that movie. And Jordan, like, I get why Jordan likes that movie. But for me, it doesn't do anything for me. But that's why I'm not going to trust Ridley Scott with this Napoleon other version, because I've been burned by him with Blade Runner. And what are there, 4 versions, 5 versions of Blade Runner? I've wasted about 12, 13 hours of my life watching Blade Runner. Yeah. I've wasted over a half day of my existence on this earth watching Blade Runner. I'm over it. I'm over it. I'm not going to give Ridley Scott the benefit of the doubt on this one. However, 2.5 stars, fine. I think The Last Duel is a better movie. There you go. I know.
I never watched it.
Call it, but
I never watched it.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, this actually looks kind of interesting. And I heard bad things. And I was like, I guess Ridley Scott's just falling on his face again. So I never got around to it.
Yeah. It wasn't terrible. It just, the third story is the weakest one, which is the problem.
Right. Well, going back to Napoleon here and more reasons why I dislike this movie. There are a lot of things in this movie that make no sense because of omissions. Primarily, like the biggest one that really bugged me, when Napoleon comes back from his first exile and he's confronted by the military, he's like, I'm your emperor. We have nothing in the movie preceding us to tell us why these guys would just like, I'm up with Napoleon right away. Like, we kind of get it based on like where he was, like stature wise and everything, but we haven't seen anything. Like, we haven't had side characters discuss the fact that they really like Napoleon. We haven't even seen him lead in a way that inspires this type of loyalty from people.
Yeah. That was the ultimate tell don't show. There was nothing. I know that. Okay. So here's a comparison for everybody. I felt that Lincoln was an atrocious, Spielberg was telling you that you were too stupid to know anything about Abraham Lincoln. I don't like Lincoln. I don't think it's atrocious, but I think it was a terrible telling of that story.
Yeah.
Because when the movie opens with them doing the Gettysburg Address, it's like, you remember this? Like, it's Leonardo DiCaprio pointing at the TV. Like, you remember this from high school? Isn't this sick? There was no respect for the fact that the audience had any knowledge going into that movie. And it was too much. Nobody was trusting. Nobody who was involved with that movie was trusting of the audience. This was assuming way too much of the audience. It was assuming that the audience knew everything. Why were we assuming so much? You know that North Americans don't really learn all that much about European and Asian culture and stuff and their wars and everything. We're learning a very Americanized version of it. So go a little more in depth in this. I know everything there is to know about Abraham Lincoln, because Abraham Lincoln is talked about from the time you're 6 years old to the time that you're 21, 22 years old. That's the president you hear about in the United States of America. But Napoleon, I want to know more. And I left this movie feeling that I still want to know more.
Yeah. I absolutely agree. And it's just like, I don't feel like I got to know Napoleon. I feel like I got to know these historical events that happened, kind of. But like, none of these characters felt like they were actually characters. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of characters I can name in this movie, surprisingly, but I don't feel connected to any of them. I didn't feel like I cared about any of them. And when we're looking at some of like the best scenes that were in the trailer, they were cut differently in a way where they were way more interesting than they were in the main movie.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, like the ice scene was definitely better in the trailer.
Yeah. Much better in the trailer, because it showed an ingenuity. It showed a character to Napoleon. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the movie, you have these guys running by clearly boats.
Yeah.
They clearly should have known they were running onto a lake. Like, it's just like, there's just so much stupidity in some of these characters. And it makes no sense as to why we're praising Napoleon as this genius tactician when we don't see any of it in the film.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to go through some of these comments over here. First, Joust Mike, who I think is new. I don't know if Joust Mike has been listening. If you're new, thank you. He started off Blade Runner's boring, but looks amazing. It's like Zack Snyder's movies. They look good, but the story isn't that good. I guess Zack Snyder movies look good, but I don't know. But then he says Matchstick Men is probably his favorite Ridley Scott movie. So I've never seen that. Maybe I'll have to check that one out. One with the Stone had asked, why a special Tuesday Night Live? It's because John is doing things with his life tomorrow. It's so pathetic and awful. And then Joust Mike said, haven't seen Napoleon yet, but did it have a touch grass scene while walking with dramatic music? Love those. Unfortunately, it did not.
No, it didn't.
And it did not have Jaimin Hansu saying, now you are free, or whatever he says. And my God, that scene. Okay, I got chills now. Now I got to move on. And then Jordan and Michael Carroll get into a little thing here of Alexander the Great was mentioned in this movie. I one day hope to see a movie about him. And then Michael Carroll says, would rather have an HBO special on Alexander the Great than a movie. I think Alexander the Great is a great character that needs to be viewed on TVs, you know, on movie, on screens. I don't feel like we've ever gotten anything on him except for Alexander, right?
I was going to say, we did have a movie on him.
Yeah, it was a disaster. So, yes, somebody needs to go out and make a good movie about Alexander the Great, because I also think that would be good.
I actually really want to point to William Williams' comment here about, was there a single instance of him being charismatic in any way? Because this is one of the things that I really had a gripe with this film. Napoleon himself was so weird. There were times where it just felt like Joaquin Phoenix was just doing Joaquin Phoenix. I can't get over. There are a couple things in the movie that I can't go over, but there are two primary scenes of Joaquin Phoenix's acting that I can't get over. One is when he starts making horse noises because he wants to have sex.
Yeah, that was a good one.
it was a good one. And it's like, okay, I understand what we're going for. But Ridley Scott never leans into that characterization of Napoleon being this weirdo, like, nymphomaniac, right? Like, we didn't get that at all. It's like, build into it. Go along. Like, build into this. And the other, I don't know if this happened with you, Phil. I don't know how many people were in the theater when you saw the movie. When Napoleon is talking to the British, and he says, I can't remember the exact line, but it's like, why do you think, no, the boats line.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
My entire theater burst into laughter.
Yeah.
The entire theater. Like, it was so ridiculous. It was so poorly written. It was just like, you think boats make you all that, essentially, was this line. And it was so ridiculous, the delivery of it. You could tell Joaquin Phoenix at this point is just like hamming it up. I was so confused by his performance in this, because there were some times where I was like, this is brilliant. And there's sometimes I'm like, I think Joaquin Phoenix is just being like his character in Bo is Afraid.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, it was just kind of all over the place. And I wasn't really sure what was going on with it.
Yeah. No, and I didn't actually... I don't remember exactly the time, and I didn't see Bo is Afraid. So I didn't think Joaquin Phoenix was anything all that special in this movie. That's really what it just came
to. Yeah, I agree.
Was anything all that special. Yeah. One with the Stone said, is there a point in time when AI is going to make better movies? No.
No.
Based on the Sports Illustrated nonsense that came out today, for anybody who's been paying attention, for anybody who doesn't know, my main job is all athletics, college, pro. That's what I do. I write for a bunch of different websites and I work a lot of live sporting events. If the Sports Illustrated stuff is true, it's pathetic, it's embarrassing, and I hope Sports Illustrated goes under forever. I really do. I hope their writers are okay, but if that's what the executives and everything at Sports Illustrated are doing, it is so shameful and it's pathetic. And ESPN does it too. ESPN doesn't make up human beings to then say, oh, look, like there's a person writing this article. But I was reading an article the other day where ESPN was saying that the Atlanta Falcons and New Orleans Saints were in the NFC North. They're in the NFC South. Right. And they said three different times in the article that they were battling for the NFC North title. Well, because whatever AI software they put the information into, they had put that those teams were in the NFC North. So the AI software is not going to correct itself.
Yeah.
AI, you're always going to know. It's not hard to figure it out when AI is writing it, and the people who are trying to get away with it right now are always going to get caught. So no, I don't think that there's a point in time where AI is going to make better movies, because the one thing that AI is not going to be able to do is understand nuance, and it doesn't have the emotion. Yep. It just doesn't. So the nuance is the biggest one, though, because AI could not write a sports betting article because it doesn't understand the nuance of sports betting, and it wouldn't understand the terminology and the phrasing and all that. It's true. But for everybody who is listening, I know that was a total sidebar, but just because it was over there, follow the Movie Buff Specialist on Twitter. We're on Twitter. Yeah. We haven't tweeted all that much yet, but you know, we're going to be doing that. And if you are a longtime listener, if you're new, if you're any of that stuff, before we start talking about Black Panther, starting in January, and I've been hyping this up a lot, $5 patrons are going to be getting once a week content from John and I. I think we're just going to call it $5 Tuesdays. We're going to release it on Tuesdays every week in the new year. So if you're looking for a Christmas present, that's a solid $60 Christmas present. Actually, I think it would be cheaper for people. I think it's $54. I think they give you 10% off. You buy the whole year. Yeah. So it's a $54 Christmas present that you could get to just listen to us once a week. You get an extra episode every week. All that being said, do you think we're actually going to see another Ridley Scott movie, or do you think this is the last Ridley Scott movie?
This is his third one in 3 years.
He's trying to pump him out. He knows.
He's pumping him out.
I mean, I do like Ridley Scott, and I respect what Ridley Scott's career has been. I think he's realizing he's kind of at the end here, and what is he going to do?
I would be shocked if we don't see at least another one.
Okay.
I guess the question is what studio is making it now, is producing it? Is like distributing it, because his last three have been pretty big flops.
Well, The Last Duel is a massive disaster. Massive. Yeah. This is not nearly, actually, if this movie didn't cost $200 million, this movie was actually a success this weekend because the only thing that beat it was The Hunger Games with $29 million. So, okay, that is what it is. To date, Napoleon has made $80 million worldwide, $34 million domestic. It made $1.4 today. Disney's Wish made $745,000 today. Cool. Disney's Wish is the disaster that came out this weekend, not Napoleon. So I do like it. Napoleon beat Wish this weekend. It beat Trolls Band Together. It's a busy weekend, Thanksgiving weekend. Yep. Napoleon currently has made $31 million more than Wish has made. So that's pretty wild. So I don't think it was as much of a disaster as it looks because it's a $200 million movie. I also think this movie has some legs because when you look at the movies that are coming out in upcoming weeks, John and I were very excited. I mean, we were talking, do we do Dream Scenario? Do we do Saltburn? What else was it? It was The Killer. And what was our fourth one? We had four movies in there. There was a fourth movie. I got to find it. Where is it, John? John. John isn't helping. Oh, Silent Night, which is the John Woo movie. I don't think any of those pull away from Napoleon. So I think Napoleon will continue. I think Napoleon's going to have a good weekend coming up because it's Ridley Scott. My theater was full. A lot of old people. I think that they like Ridley Scott. He's been around for a long time. And if they didn't catch it the first weekend because they didn't want to deal with pain in the ass teenagers in the theater, that's what they'll do. So, yeah, I think we'll see one more. It's just really going to come down to as long as his health stays there. But I think his health will.
Pretty much.
He seems like he's doing just fine now. But, you know, once you hit a certain age, you just never know. But here's to hoping. Can we go to Black Panther? That was the longest conversation I think we've ever had about one single movie.
It's been a while. It's been a while since we've had a long one like that. I just want to address Michael Carroll's question here. Yes, we will still have our weekly show on the YouTube channel every week.
Oh, yeah.
We just have more content for $5 patrons.
Yes. No, that's my biggest thing when it comes to Patreon is I will never take away what people are already getting for free. We will just expand on what the content will be. So John and I will still be doing the Marvel universe here. Once we finish that, we'll come up with another topic, but on the Patreon, $5 patrons will get a once weekly movie that it's pretty much going to be random. And they're going to be shorter 20, 25 minute episodes, but it's pretty much going to be totally random. And then during Oscar season, once they announce the 10 best picture nominees for $10 patrons, we're going to put out a review and of every single one of those movies. So it'll be 10 episodes for everybody. And Michael said, was asking if you were going to split the multiple YouTube channels. No, we're going to everything. So this is going to be the specialists and the Survivor specialist, Movie Buff specialist, and others will be beneath the specialist brand. So we will, it's going to be all the same stuff. It's just going to be the specialist will be the main page. So we're not going anywhere. It's going to still be here. Let's talk about this massive hunk of dookie. Just kidding. It's not as bad. Sorry. I know I just totally cut out. Am I back? Am I good?
You are. I wasn't sure if it was you or me, but we're back.
it was me. So where did I cut out? What did you hear me say?
Giant hunk of dookie.
Perfect. That's where I was hoping I would cut. And then I said, just kidding. It's not as bad as I remember, but it's still a bad movie. Let's talk about the first and at this point only Marvel Cinematic Universe film to be nominated for Best Picture.
Yeah.
Black Panther. So I obviously had seen this movie already. I've talked about that a lot. I had seen this prior to this review. This was the first movie since, I think it was The Avengers, that I had seen in its entirety. And the only reason I saw it is because I watch every Best Picture nominee every year. That is something that I'm committed to. I want to make sure I do it. And I've seen them all since like 1997 or something like that. And I'm trying to get through them all. I want to go all the way back to The Love Parade and what is it? The White Parade, whatever the hell it is. It's a movie that you can't even watch unless you go to UCLA. They have one copy and half the reels are missing. So I had seen this. I hated it. I despised it. I hated every second of it. I thought it was boring. I thought it was stupid. I cringed, whatever. Watching it this time after watching the other movies, what I learned is Joss Whedon, like when you think everything is bad and awful, it can't get worse, Joss Whedon exists. And so like those movies that Joss Whedon did were so bad that it actually makes this one not so bad. And obviously he didn't do all the bad ones. He didn't do Thor the Dark World. That's a disaster. He didn't do The Incredible Hulk. That's a disaster. But the Avengers movies that he did were so bad. And I think that this, to me, there's just no substance. Like, the substance is so fake. Okay, I think that the story, I think Michael B. Jordan's Killmonger character is so interesting. Mm-hmm. And they use him in the least interesting way they possibly could. I feel like all of his ideas and all of the things he's saying and how he feels about everything that is going on in the world, because he actually had to experience it, and his view on things compared to what everybody in Wakanda is experiencing is so fascinating. And Marvel's like, yeah, but then he became a really bad guy. Don't you remember that part? Now we don't like him. Like, they just glossed over it so quickly. It did nothing.
What did I say? That's what Marvel does. Marvel just makes their villains like super compelling. And then it's like, oh, hey, by the way, they're terrible people. So you have to hate them.
Yeah. Yeah. And really, my biggest takeaway from this movie on this viewing was he's not in enough of the movie. And the Andy Serkis stuff in the first hour of the movie is a total waste of my time. Andy Serkis's character should be much more of a side character. Claw should be much more of a side character. And he actually comes across as the main villain for most of this movie. And Michael B. Jordan is so on the periphery that you don't get to really feel for him. And the scene where he fights T'Challa is the best part of the movie. And then it's over and he immediately becomes Scar. Why is he immediately becoming Scar? He has good ideas. And the character who pisses me off the most of this movie is Daniel Kaluuya's character. That character does not have a single thought in his brain except for what will help benefit the plot of this movie and what will make it move forward. He is terribly written. And that's Daniel Kaluuya is one of the best working actors in Hollywood right now. And I just think they totally butchered his character. But anyway, I'll let you talk a little bit because I could go on and on. But at the same time, I couldn't come up with reasons why it was atrocious. I just couldn't come up with reasons why it was. I could come up with reasons why it was bad.
I quite enjoyed this one, actually. I'm not going to lie. It wasn't like, it's not in that top tier of Marvel for me. I think the third act prevents it from getting close to that. But it's currently my highest rated 2.5-star movie in the MCU. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of that comes down to, there are parts of this movie that I really like. I just don't know how, they just don't fit together quite well enough. Mm-hmm. There's some interesting concepts. There's a ton of interesting social commentary and this idea of like the Killmonger of it all, this idea of like, do you get back at oppressors by being oppressive back to them, right? Like, is that what justice is? And it's this huge, obviously, like, this is something that Ryan Coogler does in his movies, right? He examines this. Fruitvale Station, phenomenal film. Michael B. Jordan, phenomenal in that film. And it's dealing with this type of idea, this type of systemic oppression. And he's trying to bring it to this movie, but it almost feels like Marvel told him not to go far enough with it.
Yeah. And I think that I think for me, the Ryan Coogler directing it actually almost frustrates me a little bit more. Because Ryan Coogler is so talented. Yeah. And I think I've seen 3 movies by Ryan Coogler, maybe 4 movies by Ryan Coogler. I got to click it in here. I've seen Creed. I've seen Fruitvale Station. So I've seen 2 of his movies and I've seen 3 of his movies because I saw Black Panther. So I've seen 3 of his 4 real movies. Ryan Coogler is so incredibly talented. You can see the talent coming out. Jordan says here, the scene with Sterling K. Brown and MBJ in the Ancestral Plane is the best scene in the entire MCU. I don't know if I agree with that, but I don't necessarily disagree. And you can really see the talent of Ryan Coogler shining through there because Ryan Coogler is the one who is getting that out of his actors. But there's way too much Disney-fying of so much that goes on in this movie. And there is way for as good as some of the social commentary is, some of it is so lazy. Like, one of the things that really bothered me, and you know, I'm going to, hopefully this doesn't offend anybody, but it really bothered me when T'Challa's sister calls Martin Freeman a colonizer. I thought it was so out of character and it made no sense in the movie. Because if Michael B. Jordan's character says that, you say, okay, he's had to live in this world and really deal with it. the whole point of Wakanda is that Wakanda is being separated from everything and they're not getting involved. So for her to have that disgust for him in that moment, because it is, it's disgust. I mean, it's a throwaway line. It's disgust. It doesn't feel real to what that character has actually experienced and what that character has actually gone through. Because if she was so concerned about Martin Freeman being a colonizer, then her and the rest of Wakanda would be doing more. Yeah. But she hasn't actually experienced that in this world, in this Wakanda world. And it felt like that was the writers or Disney being like, throw that in because that's like kind of what people want to hear now. Like that's the good thing. Mm. And it felt like, okay, everything Michael B. Jordan says, yeah, I get it. But when she says it, has she ever left Wakanda other than through VR or technology?
And she's even the character in Wakanda that makes most sense to make that line, say that line, right? Like it's more something like, Lupita Nyong'o's character would make way more sense to say that line because we know she's a spy. She's been out in the world. She's seeing what's going on, right? Shuri, I feel like they didn't know what to do with Shuri in this film. I feel like that character is just...
That's the sister, right? Just for
that's the sister, yeah. Yeah. I feel like there is one scene where I really like her as a character and the rest of the movie, I don't care who she's there. But the scene in her lab where she's just Q, like James Bond Q, so good.
Okay, I disagree. I hated that so much. But anyway.
No, I loved it because I... And this is kind of where I'm talking about how disjointed this movie is. In this first act, it's almost setting it up to be a spy movie. But then they, like kind of like a Bond-style spy movie. But then they dial it back to not be that. Mm-hmm. And like that's where it kind of loses me a bit, where it's like if this just committed to like that James Bondy aspect, it could have been really, really good. And like you kind of can interweave that social commentary a lot more there, because like even like you said, Claw should have been like the side character. Claw comes off as a Bond villain in this movie.
He does. And what it feels like is Claw's a Bond villain and Michael B. Jordan's character is his henchman, but in reality, it should be reversed. Where Michael B. Jordan, we should see from early on that Michael B. Jordan is the brains of the operation. Now, I know that Michael B. Jordan gets his, you know, he's the one who's, you know, in the after everything goes wrong, he's looking at the mask. No, I'm just feeling it. That's a great line. I thought that was really funny.
Yeah.
And then they get into the ambulance and he's kissing whoever the girl is and everything like that. But it still feels like Claw is the more important of the villains. It shouldn't feel that way. It should be well known that the more important of the villains is Michael B. Jordan. Now, if you watch this movie, if you know who Killmonger is, if you've done all of that, then it becomes very simple to understand what you're looking at. But for somebody who had no experience with the MCU or very little experience with the MCU, I remember watching that saying, why? I thought Michael B. Jordan was going to be so great in this movie. And he's really not doing much because for the first hour of the movie, until he kills Andy Serkis, his character, and then you start to get the dump of everything that's going on and how he's related and how he wants to come back and how he feels isolated and why he's angry and all that. It's like, spread that out over an hour. Don't give me that in 10 minutes. You could have spread that out.
Yeah. Well, I mean, don't forget, we've already met Ulysses Claw in the MCU.
Which movie?
He was in Age of Ultron. He was the guy Ultron got the vibranium from.
Yes. That's a good point.
Like, so this is a character we're already aware of. And even in that movie, he didn't feel like a like major villain at all. So it was really weird to see him here. I also hated the way they kind of introduced the idea of Claw at the beginning of the movie with the narration and stuff. I think the narration's actually like low key really good at the beginning of the movie when you realize that it's Sterling K. Brown's character talking to the young Killmonger. Mm-hmm. Like that's when it's great. Also, I see Sterling K. Brown at the beginning of this movie, and I'm like, man, why isn't he just in this entire movie? Because he is one of the best actors in it.
I almost feel like he should have been the Lawrence Fishburne character. Lawrence Fishburne. I'm literally looking at The Matrix because somehow I got over to The Matrix right now. He should have been the Forrest Whitaker character because Forrest Whitaker, I love Forrest Whitaker, but I feel like Forrest Whitaker, he is he's the wise whatever, but Sterling K. Brown at this point is just such a hot commodity. And I think this was the year of waves, or maybe the year before waves.
2018 was the same year, right?
Was it the same year? I mean, Waves is a masterpiece, and I have that in my top 100. I love that movie, and I love Sterling K. Brown in that movie. And I had forgotten he was in this, because when I saw him at the beginning, I said, wait, Sterling K. Brown's in this? I love Sterling K. Brown. Maybe I will like this movie more. But that's, I think that, okay, so this is, here's my biggest takeaway from this movie, and it's why I won't give it 1.5 or 1 star, though, and I ended up landing on 2, and that's because what prevents this movie from being good or being bad, in my opinion, is that it is so unfocused. It is trying to tell so many stories. And what's interesting about this is this movie, if you go and look at Black Panther compared to any other movie that we have seen up to this point in the MCU, this is the most standalone of those movies. It really is. Other than the few flashbacks, this is they're not trying to shoehorn in Tony Stark. They're not even talking about the Avengers. They don't try to do all of that. It is Wakanda. It is isolated. It is all of that. But I feel like it's so scattered. It is so all over the place. And I love Chadwick Boseman. I think Chadwick Boseman was a great actor. And I think he's good in this role. It's not his fault. I don't think that that character is that interesting. And I think the rest of the characters around him are more interesting. And whether that's the writers telling the story or whether that's just the Black Panther character in general. But I think that they did a poor job of making him the most interesting character in a movie where he should be standalone. And it feels like we're all over the place. We're in Oakland. We're here. We're talking about, you know, they're going on their little journey and we have the side characters going on the journey, but we don't get to know the side characters that much. I know Angela Bassett's nominated for an Oscar for the second movie, but in this one, I barely know Angela Bassett. And Forrest Whitaker is playing a caricature version of what he is. Daniel Kaluuya, I've already said, I think his character is horrible because they didn't write him based on how would he logically think. They wrote him based on what will make the plot of this movie move forward. Yeah. I don't get enough from as Sterling K. Brown, or maybe it's the other guy calls them the Grace Jones looking women, which really makes me laugh after watching A View to a Kill, which Grace Jones is the villain in. But that's what he says at the beginning of the movie when they knock on the door. He goes, there's two Grace Jones looking women standing outside.
Does Forrest Whitaker's son playing the younger Forrest Whitaker in this movie, right?
Is it really?
I think so.
Okay, well, anyway, all of that is just to say the side characters in general, I just don't find to be all that. I don't find them to be super compelling. And I feel like they're trying to push a lot of stories into this movie when it could have easily been the rise of Killmonger and what he wanted to do, and the revenge of Black Panther. Because you think about it, like the Lion King, because I'm using this because it's set in Africa, but the Lion King tells a very similar story, right? Of person who feels that they were passed over and the world's been horrible to them, comes up, takes over, and who they think is dead is not dead, and that person comes back on the journey. That is similar to what Black Panther does. But by the time Black Panther is killed in this movie, killed, air quotes, we're an hour and 15 minutes in. How is Killmonger just becoming the most important villain of this movie an hour and 15 minutes in? So it felt like it was just too all over the place and they need to focus just a little bit more. The fight in the casino and everything like that, like they probably could have done without it. Speed it up. Just get to the point because you wasted so much time from Michael B. Jordan because he was the best. He was the best part of this movie. And I think it was a missed opportunity. Now, I know I'm in the minority on this. I know I'm in the minority on this movie, though. You know, it has a 3.6 on Letterboxd. It was nominated for Best Picture. It's a movie a lot of people talk about as one of their favorite Marvel movies. But those are my overall thoughts on the entire thing. And I feel like there were just a couple things that they just did not take advantage of.
I think it's really close to being one of the best Marvel movies. I really do. But it's like you said, it's disjointed. It's not quite there. And I think with like a little more fine tuning, it could have been very, very excellent. Mm-hmm. I think there are some interesting characters in this. Personally, I love M'Baku, who's the monkey guy.
Yeah.
I think the way that Winston Duke plays the character is really well done. I think like he's a very imposing character, and I especially really enjoy him when everyone's like escaping from Killmonger. They go to him and he reveals that, hey, look, I have T'Challa here. I think it's really well done, and I think it's a really interesting character. And again, I just wish we had more of it.
Yeah.
Like there's the most interesting characters in this movie aren't focused on enough.
Yeah. Yeah, and like Lupin and Nyong'o, I thought, you know, she's great in everything she's in. Mm-hmm. She's always top notch. But in this movie, her character, again, it was, did he freeze up? Did he whatever? Like,
yeah.
I'm not buying into that. I'm not buying into her character in that way because I haven't been told. I haven't seen anything. I've been told, but I haven't seen. And for a movie that's 2 hours and 14 minutes long, I should see more than I'm being told. Like the best scenes of this movie are what Jordan was talking about. The ancestral plane scenes are the best scenes in this movie.
Yes.
Whether it be the Michael B. Jordan and Sterling K. Brown scene, whether it be the scene with T'Challa and his father, those are the best moments of this movie, aside from the actual fight between Killmonger and Black Panther. And why those work is because it makes sense for there to be telling going on there, but the visual is great, and you see the emotion on the characters' faces in this. In all the other moments, I feel like it's just being told. And one of the biggest victims of telling in this movie, who I just made my poster because I didn't realize that it was a popular poster I could use for Letterboxd, is Martin Freeman. And Martin Freeman is in this, and he doesn't have an English accent, which really drove me crazy. It kind of was hurting my ears to see his face and not hear his normal accent.
Yeah. It
was wild. And he's telling. Shuri is telling. Even T'Challa is telling. There's just so much telling in this movie. And I get it is a superhero movie and all that, but for a 2 hour and 14 minute movie that feels like it wasted a lot of time not getting to the point, I feel like there could have been more showing. And by the time they show at the end, man, I just, that last battle scene is just for the sake of it. It's kind of like in The Exorcist 3, which I know you rewatched and I rewatched, how they have the exorcism at the end of that movie. It's only in there because Warner Brothers made them put that in there. That's how this fight scene felt. It felt like this was put in just because it had to be put in. And it's actually a really bland looking fight scene, which is a shame because I feel like they could have really used the setting of Africa really well because it is so different from the other fight scenes that we see in the MCU. And instead it was just like, okay, everybody just like kind of run around this grassy hill and we'll just, you know, make it look cluttered in the background. Meanwhile, T'Challa and Killmonger are down in the little train thing, which is cool. It's a cool idea, but I feel like the side fights going on there, the B and C storyline fights, I'm just like, okay, nice, I guess. And it's just silly.
And I think the other part is like, this is some of the worst CGI we've seen yet.
It's really bad.
It's so bad. These rhinos look terrible in the like open plains and stuff. Terrible looking rhinos. But the fight between Black Panther and Killmonger with these trains is some of the worst CGI I've ever seen in a movie.
Yeah, it was strange to me because some of the CGI in this movie is really smooth. And I put that in my review. Yeah. Some of it is horrible and some of it is really solid. You know, when they're doing like the pixely thing where the people pop up almost like the Obi-Wan Kenobi and they pop up and the after back is like blacked out almost like the little pellets almost.
Because it is pellets. It's all vibranium.
Yeah. So it's like a cast being made almost, right? Like, you know, that looks cool. I mean, I think that really works. But yeah, it did feel like cartoon Black Panther versus cartoon Killmonger. It was very strange.
It feels like a PS2 cutscene.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it feels like. It just feels like a cutscene from 20 years ago in a movie, in a video game. Mm-hmm. Like, it looks so bad. It just completely takes me out of the movie. And, like, there's some interesting conversations happening at that point, but I can't even pay attention because all I am seeing is this terrible CGI the entire time.
Yeah. Yeah, and I, you know, and look, it's the nature of the beast, right? If you're making a if you're making a Marvel movie, it has to end with a big action sequence. That's just how it has to be. There's nothing you can do about it. But there is a more interesting way to end this movie. And I remember when this came out, I was living in Los Angeles. I said I hated this movie to everybody who asked. And, you know, unfortunately, and like, look, maybe it's just the way I viewed it, but unfortunately, like, if you say you don't like Black Panther in Los Angeles, I felt like I would get some looks of like, oh yeah, what's wrong with you, huh? And I'm like, look, like, it's not that. It's this movie should have been, in my opinion, the interesting version. The version I want to see of this movie is Barry Jenkins. Yeah, Barry Jenkins directing a movie about a kid in Oakland who is growing up with the same issues that Killmonger grows up with. And for him to overcome these obstacles and become the man he wants to be, he creates in his mind this magical world where everything is going wonderfully for you know, African Americans. That's the movie I want to see. Because Barry Jenkins with his hands on something like that would make a masterpiece. Now, that's not Black Panther. That's not the movie Black Panther. Okay? Like, let's be real. But that is a movie that I would love to watch. And I, whatever that is, put that in the hands of Barry Jenkins or Ryan Coogler at this point, right? But I was talking about Barry Jenkins at the time because If Beale Street Could Talk had just come out. So that was kind of where I would go. Because If Beale Street Could Talk is a phenomenal movie. I actually prefer that to Moonlight. And Barry Jenkins has such a great eye for the minor things. That's what makes Moonlight. That's what makes If Beale Street Could Talk. And I feel like if you could get that type of movie, now you're bridging a gap. I don't know if Barry Jenkins can direct an action scene. I have no idea. I haven't seen him do it. So I don't know if he could do it. But to me, that's the interesting story. So what did it come back to when I would tell people I didn't like Black Panther? After I would say all that, it would be Killmonger's the most interesting character. I want to see the story of him. I don't want the story of him glossed over. I don't want the story of him to be, we see him as a child and then we see him as an adult. I want to see him become him. And unfortunately, that's not the movie that was made. But that's what—that's to me what would have made Black Panther a better movie. But that's not about Black Panther. Now that's about Killmonger. But if you ever wanted to make a villain movie, as a lot of these people do, you know, they make all these other villain movies. Yeah. Killmonger's the one I want to watch. It really is.
Yeah. I actually think killing off the character of Killmonger is one of the biggest mistakes they make.
Huge mistake, man. He had to be Bucky Barnes, man. He had to be the Bucky Barnes here.
I think like you could make this movie better if you just focused more on this idea of T'Challa trying to be his father, right? Live up to his father. And then you get the revelation that his father did this terrible thing, which caused, like, created Killmonger. And like he has to overcome that, right? I think it almost feels like it doesn't go delve deep enough into this idea of like the sins of the father are the are the responsibility of the son, right? And because it feels like that's where it's trying to go with this movie, but it doesn't quite get there.
Yeah, I agree 100%, because I don't also know the father enough, because the father dies in a movie that I find, well, no, that was in Civil War.
That was Civil War. You enjoyed that one.
I did enjoy that one. Yeah.
It almost feels like based on like the way the movie progresses that they wanted this to be another MCU daddy issue movie, but they were like, oh, we have too many of those. We can't do that again. Mm-hmm. When they should have just done it.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. This was the one that it made sense to do. And again, that's because this movie's isolated from the rest of the MCU.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, look, I'm going through right now and I pulled up the eight movies that were nominated for Best Picture that year. It was an interesting year. It really was. Because you had A Star Is Born, you had The Favorite, you had Roma, you had Black Klansman, you had Green Book, you had Vice. To me, that's very interesting. That's a very interesting lineup with those six movies.
Oh, weird. Right?
It's weird.
2018 was a weird year.
It's a very, very weird year. I mean, Black Klansman, to me, I mean, out of that bunch, the favorites the best by far. I don't think it's really close. Black Klansman would be my number two. And then I'd probably go Roma and you know, I didn't hate Green Book. I know a lot of people like that's become like the popular thing to do. There were billboards in LA at the time that said don't Green Book.
Not a great movie.
What'd you say?
Not a great movie.
I enjoyed it. I really did. I enjoyed it. I think Mahershala Ali is also just such a great actor, and I love
Vietnam, I agree with so that. I agree.
But then the other two were Black Panther and Bohemian Rhapsody. And the big thing for me was this felt like the turning point with the Oscars. This felt like the final nail in that coffin of we are no longer going for what the best movie is. We're going for, we're trying to make this about ratings and right. like getting wider audiences involved. Bohemian Rhapsody, especially after just rewatching Black Panther, Bohemian Rhapsody is the worst movie ever nominated for Best Picture. It really is. It's the worst movie ever nominated for Best Picture. It's an absolute disaster. It's pathetically made on every level. There's nothing good about it. Rami Malek's performance is so bad. It is just so bad. But the Oscars that year really did become, we're here for the pop culture. Making as much money as Black Panther made, making as much money as Bohemian Rhapsody made, that's your Oscar. You get to say we made a bunch of money. You don't also then need to be awarded for making that movie that made the most money. Sometimes that'll just happen. Titanic, it just happened. Yep. Avatar, it almost just happened. But you don't need to be automatically being put in there because, oh, it was popular, so now we're going to make the audiences happy. Because that really, I think that was part of the reason why I disliked Black Panther so much more the first time I watched it was because to me, it felt like I love the Oscars. I love every year. I mean, I can sit there. I can listen. You know, I know people always complain. It's too long. It's not funny. It's so serious. It's blah, blah, blah. I love the Oscars. I would sit there and watch everything. You know, whether my dad's grunting, my roommate's grunting, whatever they're complaining about, I don't care. I love the Oscars. And that was the year where I felt like, did people vote on this? Or were they just saying this is who's going to win? That was the first year where I really felt a little questionable about that because Black Panther went home with a lot of Oscars that year. Bohemian Rhapsody went home with a lot of Oscars that year. And neither one of them are Oscar type movies. That doesn't mean they're terrible movies, which Bohemian Rhapsody is. And this is, I think, is a bad movie, but it felt like it was taking away from the one space, the 1 3-hour window that cinephiles really have every year.
Yeah,
is the Oscars. And this to me felt like the year where they started taking away that 1 3-hour window that cinephiles could have. Because even A Star Is Born, it's a well-made movie, but it was a money grab, man. I mean, that movie made a boatload of money, and nominating Lady Gaga and all that stuff was, I mean, Lady Gaga was good, but she was no Olivia Colman, and that's why Olivia Colman won. But Netflix, even with Roma, it felt like it was just, well, we're pushing the hell out of Roma. Like, that's really what it was. So for me, I think that's where a lot more of my negativity at the time came around Black Panther, because it felt like it was being so forced to appeal to the MCU fans. You don't need the Oscars to appeal to the MCU fans, because guess what? None of those people are actually going to sit down and watch the Oscars. They're going to follow it on Twitter and find out if something won and then tweet about it and say, oh, that's great. But they're not going to give you the ratings that you're looking for. John and I are never going to miss an Oscars, but I've come damn close over the last couple of years because it has gotten to the point where I say, what are we watching? What are they nominating? You know, even when we go to Nomadland, I know that's obviously no moneymaker, but I'm like, what is Nomadland? You know, like, why are these the movies? So all of that's just to say, I felt like this was the year that it kind of broke. Yeah. And I said, oh no, what is going on? Because Bohemian Rhapsody is an objectively horrible movie. It's objectively horrible. There's no redeeming qualities about that movie. Go watch the scene where Aidan Gillen comes in, one of the greatest TV characters of all time, comes in and sits down and says, so this is Queen. It is the worst scene maybe in the history of film. And I think that's where a lot more of my negativity came from Black Panther. Now that I've been able to let it go, now that I know that it didn't win Best Picture, even though I'm still pissed that it beat the favorite for so many things, I can sit down, I can watch it, and I can know that ultimately it didn't lead to just a nonstop onslaught of Marvel movies being nominated when they shouldn't be nominated. So at least there was that, because that would have gotten old real fast if every single year it was just going to be, hey, Marvel movie came out, so now we have to nominate for Best Picture. We don't need to. Just show the clips. Nominate for costume design. Let people see a couple clips of them looking cool. That's more than enough.
Yep.
All right. I just talked everybody's ear off. Hopefully everybody's still going to stay with us. I mean, John, it was funny because when I was coming in, I had missed my exit coming home. And I was telling John I was in such a heated debate talking to somebody that I missed my exit by 7 exits. So I was home much later than I thought. And I said, I was like, no, we're Tuesday night. Nobody's going to listen to this. I think we've had our highest viewership of the entire series.
I think so too. Yeah.
So hopefully I kept everybody happy because, man, I know that this was probably not a fun one. I mean, neither one of us were high on either of these movies, even though you were a little bit more positive. And I was a little more positive about Napoleon. You were a little more positive about Black Panther. But I'm just trying to be real with, you know, when people ask, why do you not like Black Panther? This is the reason why I don't like Black Panther. These are the reasons why. But still, 2 stars at the end of the day, that's much better than it could have been, for sure.
Yep.
No.
It was much better on a rewatch than I thought it would be. Also, it's just the consecutive MCU viewing really helps bolster this movie a lot.
It helps it so much. It helps it so much, man. Because the thing is, if you don't watch these back-to-back-to-back-to-back, it actually... On an island, I don't think this holds up. But when you watch it with the others, you say, you know what?
That could be worse. A lot
better than some of these other ones we've had to watch. So yeah. Valier says it's fun hanging with you guys. I agree. I like hanging with us too. And I'm glad you all stuck around. Whoever stuck around, I'm glad you did, because we just talked your ear off for 1 hour and 10 minutes. That might have been our longest one yet. And I want to go to bed because it's 5 minutes to midnight here on the East Coast. So thanks for hanging with us. I know Jordan stopped commenting at 11:26. I don't know if Jordan's still here. I know Black Panther was a 5-star movie for him. So maybe we'll get some comments or something. I'd love to hear what you thought about my takes. I'm assuming you went to bed because I'm pretty sure Jordan's East Coast too. So I don't blame him. But everybody else, thank you so much for listening. Next week, John, what's the next MCU movie?
It's Infinity War.
Okay.
We're at the next Avengers movie already.
Okay.
So, and this is a big one. This is the culmination of everything we have seen so far.
Okay. All right. So we're doing that. And what do we landed on Dream Scenario, right?
We did. Yeah.
Okay. So we're going to do the Nicolas Cage movie Dream Scenario, because we were going to do Saltburn. And then I said, you know what? Saltburn's probably going to be an Oscar movie. And Dream Scenario feels like it's going to be like a smaller movie. And I don't think either one is going to make all that much money. I think Saltburn will make more for sure, but I don't think it's going to make that much money. So I said, let's do Dream Scenario, because if we don't watch it now, we're probably never going to watch it. Whereas Saltburn is definitely going to, I feel like Saltburn's going to be an Oscar movie, especially with Emerald. Is it Fennel or Ferrell?
It's Fennel, isn't it?
Is it Fennel? Okay. With Emerald Fennel attached to it, I think that'll end up getting some buzz around Oscar season. So, all right, that's it. I'm done. I'm out. John, you're out. You have no choice. Yep. I'm hitting end. Bye, everybody.
Bye.